From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
I love you much. It's not enough. I love blowing you love puff.
The new Hollywood take on The Great Gatsby opens tonight across the country. Leonardo DiCaprio as Gatsby, Jay-Z and Beyonce in the thick of the soundtrack, Australian Baz Luhrmann directing with a lavishly operatic touch. But it's still Gatsby, and it moves. This hour on Point, The Great Gatsby, from F. Scott Fitzgerald to hip-hop days. You can join us on air or online where this conversation never ends. Are you ready for this? From Jazz Age to Jay-Z, do you still swoon for The Great Gatsby? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is A.O. Scott, who reviewed The Great Gatsby for The New York Times. A.O. Scott, Tony, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Nice to be with you, Tom.
So this has had some pretty tough reviews. David Denby, The New Yorker, says Baz Luhrmann is less a filmmaker than a music video director with endless resources and a stunning absence of taste. You weren't so hard on it. What do you say, Tony?
Well, with all respect to David Denby, he says that like it's a bad thing. I would not quarrel that that Baz Luhrmann is a great vulgar showman of our times. But I thought that his take, I didn't unreservedly love the movie, but I was pleasantly surprised by what an intelligent interpretation of the book it was, and I admired the way he turned it into spectacle, the way that I think he freed the book a little bit from the prison of its reputation. It's always a problem, I think, when filmmakers set out to adapt acknowledged masterpieces. There's such a burden, and there's such a burden on The Great Gatsby, which is the book that everyone read or was supposed to read in the ninth grade, and everyone wrote a term paper on the American Dream or some such topic. So for Luhrmann to kind of turn this into this pop spectacle, you know, in 3D with hip-hop on the soundtrack, with, crazy digital effects and swooping camera movements, I thought was quite audacious and in some places very, very effective.
I have to say I went in very leery from what I had seen of the trailer, ready to maybe agree with Denby, you know, confuses tumult with style, discordant messiness, flimsy phantasmagoria. But when it's all done, it kind of got to me. I mean, you know, it's true. It's a sort of Bollywood meets a Prada ad at some level or Ralph Lauren, but nevertheless, here's a little clip. This is Tobey Maguire playing Nick Carraway, who's presented as the narrator in this movie version from the trailer of the new film The Great Gatsby. Just talking New York in the 20s.
New York, 1922. The tempo of the city had changed sharply. The buildings were higher. The parties were bigger. The morals were looser and the liquor was cheaper. The restlessness approached hysteria.
The restlessness approached hysteria. Give us a sense. Almost nobody's seen this yet. We've seen press screenings here, but just those party scenes at the Great Gatsby Mansion on Long Island. West Egg, the downside, but he's very high in here. Just a sense of what happens there.
Yes. Well, what happens? It's true to the story for the most part. That is, and in fact, there is the dialogue. Much of it comes verbatim from the book, and much of the voiceover as well, verbatim from the narrative. And it's, you know, Nick Carraway shows up, his cousin, his second cousin is Daisy Buchanan, married to this racist philanderer, Tom Buchanan. She's played by Carey Mulligan. And there's this mysterious neighbor, Nick's neighbor, Jay Gatsby, very wealthy man who throws these lavish parties, and no one knows quite who he is, and there are all of these rumors about who he is, and what Luhrmann does is just really distill and amplify the romanticism in Fitzgerald's book. So you have the romantic view that Nick has of this elusive, enigmatic Gatsby, and the romantic view that Gatsby has of Daisy, who's the great lost love of his life that he wants to get back. And in the middle of it all, you have these parties, which again, I think, try to capture the excess and decadence and just extravagance that Fitzgerald is trying to evoke, but to bring them into what a modern audience would kind of associate with and expect from that kind of scene. So it does feel like a hip-hop video. It is about, you know, driving around in big cars and popping bottles and drinking champagne and, yeah. Everything that you would see in the sort of modern celebrity lifestyle. So I think that it finds a link between the excess and the, say, the commodity fetishism of the 1920s and that of our own day. So he did what I think Lerman accomplished what often eludes directors when they're going after older books, which is he put it into the present in some way. I mean, it's still set in the 1920s, but it feels very contemporary. It feels very of this moment.
All laced through with now making that link from the wildness of the jazz age to our, music video quick cuts and digital razzmatazz, and behind it all whiz The Mystery of Gatsby. Here's a little bit where Jordan Baker, the slinky golfer played by Elizabeth Debicki, introduces Nick Carraway, played by Tobey Maguire, to the revelers at one of Gatsby's incredible parties.
Did you get an invitation?
People aren't invited to Gatsby's.
Well, I was. Seems I'm the only one. Who is this Gatsby?
He was a German spy during the war.
Teddy Barton, Nick Carraway.
A German spy?
No. He's the Kaiser's assassin.
I heard he killed a man once.
It's true. Killed for fun, free of charge. He's certainly richer than God.
You don't really believe he killed a man, do you?
Well, let's go find him and you can ask him yourself.
And of course, then he shows up. Leonardo DiCaprio as Gatsby. What do you make of his performance, A.L. Scott?
Well, I think that he does a lot of acting with the accent, which DiCaprio does a lot these days. You know, if you
old
think about
sport,
Shutter Island, or J. Edgar. So he does a lot of old sport and this strange sort of trying to get, I guess, a sort of 20s mid-Atlantic accent. But so that's a little bit distracting and a little bit self-conscious. But he does have the charisma that's necessary for the part. I mean, when Leo DiCaprio is a real movie star in the sense that when he is on the screen, that's where you're looking. That's where all of the attention gravitates. And I think that there's the suggestion always about Gatsby that he's enigmatic and troubled and melancholy, but also perhaps empty and self-deluded. There's a tension within the book and within the story. Just who is this guy? What does he mean? What is he about? And I think that DiCaprio, just the kind of the quality of his face and the way he moves physically, captures some of that. So you're looking at this guy and you're wondering, well, but who is he really? Is he really anybody? I think that kind of anchors the movie and also helps with its kind of romantic, wistful, nostalgic mood.
I mean, in fairness to DiCaprio, in the book itself, F. Scott Fitzgerald says Gatsby's accent approaches the absurd and he's trying to sort of play that role. Here's a little bit more from the trailer. Gatsby shows up telling a story of his life to Nick Carraway.
I will tell you God's truth. God's truth about myself. I am the son of some very wealthy people. Sadly, they're all dead now. I lived in all the capitals of Europe, collecting jewels, hunting big game, painting a little. Then came the war, old sport. Every Allied government gave me a decoration.
Major J. Gatsby for Valor Extraordinary.
That's right. Could it all be true?
Leonardo DiCaprio is Gatsby. Tony Scott, A.O. Scott, David Demme says the book is too intricate, too subtle, too tender for the movies. Can that be true?
Well, the book and the movie are different creatures. I think that one has to be careful about using one as the sort of ruler to measure the other. I mean, the book is a unique literary performance and is very delicate. The writing is exquisite, and I think is one of the reasons that it survives as well as it does. It's a very beautiful, haunting, elusive book, but it's also not entirely in control of its themes. It's a little bit of a mess. It's a little bit ambivalent. Nick and Fitzgerald both are a little bit ambivalent about how they regard Gatsby and the world and the values that he represents. So I think there's a lot. I prefer to think of the book not as a standard against which we're going to measure the movie, but as sort of the material that the movie's going to draw on and reimagine. So I think if you think of this as the sort of the pop opera version of a classic novel, you can maybe forgive it some of its excesses. I mean, if you wanted to see the movie that F. Scott Fitzgerald might have made, and he of course had some very grim experiences in Hollywood, then this would not be that. But we have his novel, and now we have this this movie that I think is quite interesting and enjoyable, imperfect, excessive, but I think worthwhile. I think a very entertaining and also very intelligent take on this novel.
A.O. Scott with the New York Times. Great to have you with us, Tony. Thank you so much for joining us. Novelist Jay McInerney and Anne Margaret Daniel join us when we return. We're talking about The Great Gatsby. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. But my baby's always sneaking out. But damn, I love her, so that's why I gotta let her know that I'll be here for her. I'll always be her man. And baby, that's the truth. You my chick, mother goose. I got that proof. I put that diamond on that hand. Let's green light. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about The Great Gatsby, back on the big screen, and the source of it all, F. Scott Fitzgerald's masterpiece from the jazz age, now with a hip-hop contemporary Hollywood edge. You can hear it in more of the soundtrack from the new movie, out today. Behind us right there, that's Florence and the Machine with Over the Love from Baz Luhrmann's Gatsby. You can join the conversation this hour. Are you ready to go back to Gatsby? Is it time again in our age of excess and the 1%? Can you see Leonardo DiCaprio in the role? Are you ready for the Baz Luhrmann Jay-Z touch? And what keeps us coming back to East Egg, West Egg, Gatsby, the green light at the end of Daisy Buchanan's Dock? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Here's a little more from the movie. Nick Carraway, Tobey Maguire, visits Tom Buchanan, the polo player, and his wife Daisy, played by Joel Edgerton, Australian, Kerry Mulligan, British. Their friend Jordan Baker, played by Elizabeth Debicki, is there too. Tom Buchanan asks Carraway about his home in West Egg, the new money part of Long Island.
Daisy tells me that you're over in West Egg, throwing your lot in with those social-climbing, primitive new money types.
My little shack's just a cardboard box at 80 a month.
Your life is adorable.
I know somebody in West Egg.
I don't know a single person that side of the bay.
Oh, you must know Gatsby.
Gatsby?
And soon enough, they will all know again. Joining me now from Bridgehampton, Long Island, is Gatsby aficionado and celebrated author Jay McInerney, who took on a little F. Scott Fitzgerald sparkle himself with his 1984 book Bright Lights, Big City. Recent books include The Good Life and How It Ended. He's the narrator of a BBC documentary on F. Scott Fitzgerald that comes out next week, and no stranger to Long Island, Gatsby country. Jay McInerney, welcome to On Point. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
And with us from New York is Anne Margaret Daniel. She teaches English, American, Irish literature at the New School in New York, advised on the new film about what Gatsby's taste in stage and reading might have been. She's also a great Gatsby aficionado, longtime, many-time reader. You can link to one of her essays at our website, onpointradio.org. Anne Margaret Daniel, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hello, Tom, and thanks for inviting me.
Okay. Jay, first to you. Here you were in The Observer writing last summer about all the reasons, as you concluded there, I will almost certainly be skipping Baz Luhrmann's film starring Leonardo DiCaprio. Now you've seen it, and I think you're eating a little crow, Jay.
I'm always grateful for the opportunity to eat my words, and I think I have to in this case. I really was thinking about skipping the movie. You know, I just wasn't sure that I wanted, to see contemporary actors playing those characters every time I reread the book. And I was frankly deeply skeptical that that Gatsby could be filmed, that it was filmable. I mean, it has always seemed to me so much a function of Fitzgerald's shimmering prose.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you know, up to this point, I would say the only successful adaptation was GATS, the elevator repair company's 7-hour version, which was the entire text.
They read the whole darn thing, and it takes 7 hours, and it's not cinematic really at all. That
it isn't, but every word is there, mm-hmm. And you know, frankly, I mean, there are aspects of the plot and of the characterizations that Fitzgerald himself acknowledged are a little bit thin, shaky, underexplained.
In the text.
In the text. Mm-hmm. And there's always, Gatsby's rise from poverty and to great wealth is extremely sketchy, and his love affair with, likewise his love affair with Daisy. And without Fitzgerald's prose to create that that shimmering aura around the two of them, I've always been skeptical about whether this story would really hold up on screen.
And in the event, in this production?
I'm happy to say I think I was wrong in this case.
How did they pull it off?
Well, you know, it's not the great Gatsby that Fitzgerald wrote, but I think it's a very valid interpretation. I think what people forget is that the 1920s were vulgar and gaudy, and in that sense, it's a great adaptation. I think there's a tendency to revere this book to the detriment of really hearing the message. And Lerman's operatic, over the top sensibility, I think, in some ways, is perfect for the story of the 1920s, the jazz age, as Fitzgerald himself.
It was over the top. I mean, Anne Margaret Daniel, you have loved this book for a long, long time, I know. And now here it is on film. Does it work? Describe the way they treat it to us and what you make of it.
Oh, it works. It's dazzling. It's a lot of fun, but you know what else it is? Mm-hmm. It's a lot of hard work and a lot of research. Tony Scott was right to say that there's a lot of dialogue from the book that they actually use, but they also use lots of other writings by Fitzgerald. For instance, some of the dialogue's taken from excerpts from his magnificent essay, My Lost City, where he's looking back at his New York of the jazz age from the sadder vantage point of the Depression-era 1930s. I think it's a wonderful translation of the book. And what both Jay and Tony said about the idea of the movie, in some sense, freeing the book a little bit from the prison of its reputation is really spot on.
Here's a little bit more. This is Jordan Baker again in the film, played by Elizabeth Debicki. She's explaining to Nick Carraway, Tobey Maguire, what's behind Gatsby's huge house and extravagant parties.
It's a strange coincidence.
What is?
The fact that Gatsby's house is just across the bay.
It's no coincidence. He bought that house to be near her. He threw all those parties hoping she'd wander in one night. He constantly asked about Daisy. I was just the first person that knew her.
All that for a girl he hasn't seen in 5 years.
That,
so now he just wants me to invite her over to tea. The modesty of it.
You know, there, for the first time in the clips we've played, Anne Margaret Daniel, you get the sense it's not all hip-hop. Yes, there are some raging parties here, but before you know it, there's an awful lot of what we are maybe more familiar with from the 1920s setting in tone, and there is a respect for the text here. They do really go to the heart of the book, I thought.
Well, I was delighted by that and not surprised by it, knowing the amount of research, particularly, that had gone into the Jazz Age, into Fitzgerald's world, as well as into Fitzgerald and his writings themselves. There's the soundtrack features, Fats Waller, Jelly Roll Morton, W.C. Handy, and most notably makes use of George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. When we first see Leonardo DiCaprio as Gatsby, it's a great, grand movie moment.
Let me get our callers in. Minneapolis, Pete is calling. Hi, Pete, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I was going to avoid it because of the modern rap music or hip-hop that I heard was in there, and I just wondered how they could really just pull that off in a movie set in the 20s. I mean, Robert Redford didn't do that. He didn't put 70s music in. He didn't put disco in. So how did they pull that off for you guys?
Yeah, Jay, explain the alchemy of it. To my mind, I was worried about that, and then it worked like gangbusters. How would you say that's done, Jay?
Well, as Ann Margaret said, it's not a hip hop soundtrack. It's a mix of contemporary and music
sort of woven through, laced around,
and music from the 20s. Mm-hmm. And somehow that was one of the things I was most skeptical about, and somehow the blend seems to work very well. There's the great scene where where Nick and Gatsby first drive into the city together and have lunch at a speakeasy, and there's just a great Jay-Z track over the speakeasy scene, which somehow seemed utterly congruous and utterly perfect for this very high energy scene with a sort of syncopated visual rhythm. It was
the jazzy black dancers and all the booze. I mean, it's got the Cristal kind of hip hop thing going on, even in Fitzgerald's world.
Yes, although I think Moet and Chandon was the company that product
placement. yeah, maybe so. Let's hear a little more. Here's Daisy Buchanan, played by Carey Mulligan. She's dancing with Jay Gatsby. He gets her into his realm at last. She, who he has done so much to attract back into his realm, at a grand party at his house in the film Gatsby.
Is all this made entirely from your own imagination?
No. You were there all along. And every idea, every decision. Of course, if anything is not your liking, I'll change it.
It's perfect. From your perfect, irresistible imagination.
From Baz Luhrmann's The Great Gatsby. And, Margaret, remind us of what Gatsby's up to here. For those who somehow have not run into this book or have lost it in the fog of high school time, who is he? What's his project?
If I could say for sure who Gatsby is and what his project is and what he's up to,
the movie's pretty clear.
I'd be a real genius. Yes. Well, seriously, in terms of the movie, Jay Gatsby, formerly Jimmy Gats, is Mr. Nobody from Nowhere. He's a poor young man who has met and fallen in love with a beautiful girl when he is a penniless young lieutenant in the Army. He goes away to serve at war, and while he's away, his girl marries someone else, marries a rich man who has not gone to war. And when Gatsby comes back from war as Jay Gatsby, he sets out to not only win her back, but to win her back to where she was the moment he met her, to repeat the past and have Daisy Buchanan become Daisy Fay again, his girl.
His girl, and this poor kid from North Dakota or somewhere who, you know, we're told ventures out of absolute poverty. It's portrayed as Jay rescues a rich guy on a yacht, sort of picks up all the iconography and clothing and style and little affected speech of the upper crust and goes for it with a bunch of sort of gangster money behind him that is thinly papered over in the book and in the movie. Pretty thinly papered over, Jay.
Well, it's
that's always been a problem. You know, if you look too closely at the book, the source of Gatsby's wealth is never really examined too closely. You know, if someone like Theodore Dreiser had written this novel, a large part of the novel would have been about the accumulation of his fortune. But You know, Fitzgerald is really just interested. Fitzgerald is more interested in the love story and the great, the colossal vitality of Gatsby's illusion, as he calls it. This is what drives him, is his love of Daisy Fay.
It's kind of amazing. Kathy in Brookline, Massachusetts, kind of amazing the way it goes from book to movie and back with a whole swirl of hip-hop around, and yet it works. Kathy, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I disagree on so many levels with the critic. First of all,
the one who just spoke says
that it works on a lot of levels, and there's no allusion to how Gatsby got the money. What about the cufflinks that look like human molars? That screams out at you, corruption. And the other thing is, 2 points, Fitzgerald was brilliant, and what one of the critics said was a dual perspective, or I guess, I don't know if the that he's ambivalent, is truly the dual perspective that a lot of people have about status and money and how it's amassed. And the other thing is, if in fact you want to be faithful to the time and the place, and the book is, it's all-encompassing. And, you know, the movie Chicago, for example, the minute that movie started, I was in the speakeasy. And that is what I would want to see in The Great Gatsby, because the minute I am in that book, I am in that world, and that world did not include hip-hop.
You know, Kathy, I would say go with an open mind, because, it didn't include hip-hop, but it included jazz, and jazz was the sort of forward, challenging sound of that time. I would go with an open mind. I would try it. I mean, Anne-Margaret, yes, he's got cufflinks like human molars, but he's also got the suits and the yellow Duesenberg and the giant mansion.
Well, in the movie,
those weren't Gatsby's cufflinks, by the way. Those were Meyer Wolfsheim's.
Oh, Meyer Wolfsheim's. That's right. His crime world buddy.
And in the movie, they turn it into a tie tack rather than cufflinks. I'm not quite sure why, but it makes
center.
It stand out more. Yes.
Yes.
I think that when you mention the cufflinks of human molars and that symbolizing corruption, one thing I think the movie does really well is foreground Mayor Wolfsheim slightly more as some sort of a mob boss who is to a degree controlling Gatsby. Gatsby is, as he says when he first greets him in the movie, my boy. Later he says, both in the book and in the movie, I made him, I created him. And you really get that sense much more in the movie than you do in the book. So it goes a bit toward explaining where Gatsby gets his wealth. Now, when it comes to the being faithful to time and place, I think one of the things this movie wants to do is actually make us uncomfortable. It makes us situated in both the 1920s and the present day. And the way in which Baz Luhrmann brings it all back home to us makes us walk out of the theater feeling not just that, oh, this happened in the jazz age and it happened in the context of a classic book that's, you know, nearly 100 years old now, so it's at a safe distance. It's the proximity to us that makes us walk out of the theater feeling a little twitchy and nervous and also thinking.
Jay, there's so much that's proximate to us in this story and the movie.
Yeah, well, I'm speaking to you from out here on the east end of Long Island, and you know what? They're building a lot of seaside mansions here. This is, the central narrative of Gatsby, I think, is still very relevant, and I think that's one of the reasons that Baz Luhrmann was trying to make the story feel contemporary. There is a way in which jazz is now a kind of a, you know, for many people, a kind of an antiquated period sound, and clearly he was trying to bring us right up to the present.
And he does it, and somehow without losing that period feel that I think our caller Kathy's going to find if she will cut through Jack White and Beyonce and Jay-Z's touch and all the rest to go see it. Baz Luhrmann's The Great Gatsby is out tonight. We're talking about it right now with Jay McInerney, the great novelist, and Anne-Margaret Daniel, who advised. You can join us, 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
In a deep well, out of secrets, and nobody else to tell. Take the money, why don't you, honey?
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about The Great Gatsby. Back on the big screen, and the source of it all, F. Scott Fitzgerald's masterpiece from the jazz age, now with a hip-hop Hollywood edge, but plenty of Rhapsody in Blue and period music in there as well. And Margaret Daniel joins us from New York, teaches English literature and more at the New School in New York. Did some advising on this film, has written about it wonderfully. You can link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. And celebrated author Jay McInerney is with us from Long Island, Gatsby Country, author of Bright Lights, Big City, The Juice, A Hedonist in the Cellar, How It Ended, The Good Life, and much more. Great to have him with us this hour. You can join us, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. What do you love about Gatsby? Are you brave enough to go see it in the film? Linda from New Orleans. Thanks for calling, Linda. What do you hear?
Well, I've been listening all morning, and I find it interesting that everyone, their comments are about the music, that it's so inappropriate for the film. And I guess the people are not familiar, or maybe they're not, with Baz Luhrmann's style. I mean, all of his films, I mean, going back to Moulin Rouge, it certainly wasn't typical of the period. So you have to kind of let go of that and just enjoy his interpretation or his handling of the film.
Linda, you sound like you've got an open mind. I think you'll have to let go, maybe even less than you think, for it to work here. Took me on a ride. Thanks for calling from New Orleans. Yukon, Oklahoma. Josh is calling. Hi, Josh. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm actually just calling because one of the things I've noticed about your guest and as well as your callers is that everybody has actually read the book. I have never read the book. Never got a chance to, either in school or on my free time. And I think this film, no matter who the producer is, Jay-Z or Tony Scott, I think the lure that they had created has actually made me enthralled to actually want to go read the book on my own now. And I'm in my mid-30s, and I'm curious if there's anybody else that probably feels the same way as I do.
I bet it will happen. I would also gamble that if you see the movie, the book will really pop up to you, and you'll appreciate just the unbelievable beauty of the language. I mean, it's just breathtaking, you know, Fitzgerald writing in his Blue Gardens, men and girls came and went like moths among the whisperings and the champagne and the stars. And off we go. I'm guessing you'll like them both there. One more from Oklahoma. Oklahoma City. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Well, what do you think?
Well, you know, I'm a jazz musician. I make my money, my living playing jazz, and also a bit of a book nut. You know, I love The Great Gatsby. I grew up reading it. And, you know, I like the fact that there's hip-hop in the movie. I don't think that there's anything negative about it. And, you know, jazz and that whole line of music, just the history behind hip hop, how it got there, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find a lineage, and there's an open mind as well. Here's another little scene from the movie. Tom Buchanan, played by Joel Edgerton, confronts Gatsby DiCaprio in a room at the Plaza Hotel. There's nothing hip-hop about this. It's straight on high emotion. Tom's wife, Daisy, played by Carey Mulligan, is there too.
I want to ask Mr. Gatsby one more question.
Oh, please, please go on, Mr. Buchanan. Go on.
What kind of a row are you trying to cause in my house anyhow?
He isn't causing a row. You're causing a row. Please have a little self-control.
Self-control? Oh, I suppose the latest thing is to sit back and let Mr. Nobody from nowhere make love to your wife. Well, if that's the idea, you can count me out.
And there's going to be, there will be blood, I guess. Jay McInerney, people talk about Gatsby as personifying the American dream. I mean, Lionel Trilling went further. He said, Gatsby between power and dreams comes inevitably to stand for America. How do you see that in the book, in the film, Jay?
Well, Gatsby's central idea in his was the idea that he could invent himself from scratch, as it were. And that is the quintessential American idea, that we come to this continent, that our ancestors came to this continent, and we start fresh, and we create the self that we want to create. And certainly Gatsby was successful in that enterprise up to a point. And And I think that is, you know, one of the things that, that makes this book resonate so much for Americans and for those who are enthralled with the idea of America.
What he wanted was somewhere in the past, back in his golden moment with Daisy, he was trying by whatever means necessary to get back there. You've got a little reading to get F. Scott Fitzgerald himself in our ears here, Jay, I think, just from the end of the book, and it's so evocative and wonderful. I wonder if you'd pick it up and share it.
This is the very end of the book. Gatsby's dead, and Nick Carraway is reflecting on events. Most of the Big Shore places were closed now, and there were hardly any lights except the shadowy, moving glow of a ferry boat across the sound. And as the moon rose higher, the inessential houses began to melt away until gradually I became aware of the old island here that flowered once for Dutch sailors' eyes, a fresh green breast of the New World. Its vanished trees, the trees that had made way for Gatsby's house, had once pandered in whispers to the last and greatest of all human dreams. For a transitory, enchanted moment, man must have held his breath in the presence of this continent, compelled into an aesthetic contemplation he neither understood nor desired, face to face for the last time in history with something commensurate to his capacity for wonder. And as I sat there brooding on the old, unknown world, I thought of Gatsby's wonder when he first picked out the green light at the end of Daisy's dock. He had come a long way to this blue lawn, and his dream must have seemed so close that he could hardly fail to grasp it. He did not know that it was already behind him, somewhere back in that vast obscurity beyond the city, where the dark fields of the Republic rolled on under the night. Gatsby believed in the green light, the orgastic future that year by year recedes before us. It eluded us then, but that's no matter. Tomorrow, we will run faster, stretch out our arms farther. And one fine morning, so we beat on, boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past.
Jay McInerney, reading there from F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby. You read that wonderfully, and there it is, that fresh green breast of the new world, the last and greatest of all human dreams, by which he means to say this country, America.
Indeed. And I think when you hear that passage, you can't help understanding why some of us had such great trepidation about the idea of a cinematic adaptation. You know, the prose is so extraordinary that it's... I think for some of us, it's difficult to imagine the cinematic interpretation.
Just as fine as it can be, and you hear the thump, and you wonder how they can work together, and yet somehow, by my lights, they do. And, Margaret Daniel, you've got a reading from a little earlier, but it's about when he's trying to reach back for that past, that vision he had, maybe the vision of those first Dutch-setting eyes on the fresh green breast of the new world. He's trying to get back there in Louisville, where he had met, as you say, Daisy, later Daisy Buchanan. While he was off at war, she's gone off with super rich Tom Buchanan from Chicago, the polo player.
She has, indeed.
But Gatsby in the book, he goes back to Louisville. He's trying to find that embrace, that moment. Could you read a bit for us?
I'd love to. And I just wanted to thank Jay first. That was gorgeous. Here's a section as Gatsby has finally departed Louisville, having either found or not found what he's been looking for, and you can be the judge.
Before he's made his fortune and has got his great house in the West Egg Tree, this is just the home from war, trying to find his love.
Yes, he's made the journey home, Fitzgerald says, with the last of his army pay. He's now penniless. He left, feeling that if he had searched harder, he might have found her, that he was leaving her behind. The day coach... he was penniless now, was hot. He went out to the open vestibule and sat down on a folding chair, and the station slid away and the backs of unfamiliar buildings moved by. Then out into the spring fields, where a yellow trolley raced them for a minute with the people in it who might once have seen the pale magic of her face along the casual street. The track curved, and now it was going away from the sun, which, as it sank lower, seemed to spread itself in benediction over the vanishing city where she had drawn her breath. He stretched out his hand desperately, as if to snatch only a wisp of air, to save a fragment of the spot that she had made lovely for him. But it was all going by too fast now for his blurred eyes, and he knew that he had lost that part of it, the freshest and the best, forever.
The freshest and the best forever. And again, it's that kind of reference to this country's story, isn't it, Anne Margaret Daniel? Is that how you read Fitzgerald?
Well, yes, to a degree it is. Everything Jay said about the American dream is absolutely true in this book. You can be Mr. Nobody from nowhere, and you can end up in that house, looking across the bay, throwing those parties. But be careful what you wish for. This book is about the failure of the American dream and the hazards of it. There's a point fairly late in the novel where Nick Carraway talks about a nightmare he has, a sort of nightmare dreamscape that he sees when he thinks of East Egg now. And he describes it as a painting by El Greco. Those nightmares, too, can be part of the dreams. Dreams can turn into nightmares. And in some ways, this is a cautionary tale as well as an elegant, nostalgic tale of possibility.
I mean, East Egg, all those mansions, all that old money, that super wealth. It's, you know, the Greenwich maybe of that time, certainly of this, the hedge fund guys. It all comes to mind when you hear it. And Gatsby believes that with that wealth at his disposal, and the dream that he's built with it, he can get his Daisy back. It's not so clear if he can, but he believes it. Here he is, Leonardo DiCaprio, in that moment where he's talking with Nick Carraway, Tobey Maguire, about all he's done for Daisy and what you can pull back from the past.
I've gotten all these things for her. I've gotten all these things for her. Now she just wants to run away. She wants to leave that.
Jay, you can't repeat the past.
Can't repeat the past.
No.
Why, of course you can. Of course you can.
Says Leonardo DiCaprio as Gatsby. Jay, what about that? You know, there's the intoxicating American dream and the grotesquerie that leaves Carraway imagining an El Greco version of all that splendor.
Well, ultimately, it all falls apart. And Jay Gatsby is unable to buy back his dream. He comes very close. I mean, I think that's what provides the central tension of the narrative is that we're rooting for Gatsby despite his shady associations and his questionable legitimacy. We want him to succeed, and we want the love story to work. We want Gatsby to be able to reclaim his princess, but ultimately he can't. And ultimately, his notion that you can buy happiness turns out to be flawed.
An old big money with its carelessness, as Fitzgerald writes, triumphs. Here's Tom Buchanan again at the Plaza Hotel standoff from the trailer.
Mr. Gatsby, I'd like to know
exactly who are you, anyhow? Can't you see who this guy is? With his house, his parties, and his fancy clothes.
I love you much.
We were born different from you.
It's in our blood. Nothing that you do or dream up can ever change that.
The 1% will rule. Tanya in Washington, D.C. Tanya, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Oh, great. I just wanted to kind of give a defense for the use of hip-hop in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, at the time in the 1920s, you know, jazz was considered so avant-garde and edgy and out there. I mean, it was played by, you know, black people.
Yeah.
How exotic.
Right.
You know, and I think with the passage of time, that kind of music is now mainstream. It's part of the Great American Songbook. And I think the only way that you really get a feel for the time of how exciting it was with women drinking and shortening their hemlines is to put in music that today has that same edginess and otherness, you know, that rap has. And I think that maybe that is what the director of the movie was going for when he put hip-hop in place of what would normally be mainstream music now.
Tanya, you are tuned in. I think you got your finger right on it. Anne Margaret?
Yeah, could I just agree with that and also say that the sense we're getting from the clips from the trailers don't really correspond to the movie. The movie yeah. itself is very quiet. The loud music is as it is in a party you go to. The loud music is more reserved for parties and for heavy dramatic moments. It does not overwhelm the movie at all. You instead have a sense more of theme music in the movies. Yeah. For instance, Love is Blindness is a song that's consistently associated with Gatsby and his love for Daisy. Young and Beautiful is Daisy's theme song. And you hear that swelling up when she's on the screen, but dimly. It's not overwhelming. So enjoy the music at the parties, but don't fear it at other times.
Don't fear it. You've got Fats Waller in there and Gershwin and Rhapsody in Blue. It will take you back as well as put you right in a contemporary sense of it. I am so grateful to the two of you for sharing your sense of the book and the movie both with us this hour. Jay McInerney, author of Bright Lights, Big City, Ransom, The Good Life, The Story of My Life. Jay, it's great to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you.
Great to be with you.
Thank you. And Anne Margaret Daniel in New York, you're the best. Thanks very much for being with us this hour, Anne.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks, Jim.
And there's Gatsby. He believed in the green light, the orgiastic future that year by year recedes before us. Maybe you'll see it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point. The way you play for me at your show, and all the ways I got to know your pretty face.